This is React Podcast. I'm Chantastic, and I'm inviting you to my one time a year event, React Holiday. It's 25 React related tips delivered right to your inbox. This year's focus is non-React skills that support great React development, JavaScript, JSX, and even HTML. Sign up for this newsletter at react.holiday, that's react.holiday, and get 25 lessons right to your inbox. Now, cue the music. Tim Nootkins joins us to talk about the new tech in Next.js 10. At this year's Next.js Conf, they announced killer new performance features that came from their partnerships with Google and the React core team. In this chat, Tim shares what that means for users and developers alike. This episode is supported by Honey Badger and Infinite Red. Let's be honest, you ship code with errors. Don't worry, I do too. Oftentimes, errors get caught by automated or QA tests, but sometimes they don't. When you push code with errors, and those errors make it all the way to the user, you want Honey Badger at your back. Honey Badger monitors and sends alerts in real time, providing the context you need to quickly identify and eradicate errors in your day-to-day deployments. Honey Badger gives you DevOps superpowers by combining error monitoring, uptime monitoring, and cron monitoring in a single, easy-to-use platform. And Honey Badger doesn't just have your back, they also alert you when external services fall over or background jobs start to fail. Get 30% off of Honey Badger for 6 months by mentioning React Podcast at signup. There's no credit card required, just visit honeybadger.io. At honeybadger.io, you'll find the story of Star, Josh, and Ben, the bootstrappers behind Honey Badger, and why self-funding means your interests are always number one. Check them out at honeybadger.io. Infinite Red is your go-to resource as a React and React Native developer. They know these frameworks inside and out. It doesn't matter if your company is huge, medium, or small, Infinite Red can help you design, build, and ship quality apps. They've been doing it for over 10 years, and listeners of this show absolutely love having them as a friendly, expert resource. Infinite Red will give you $750 when you start or refer a new project. Get expert React and React Native help at reactpodcast.infinite.red. Tim, welcome back to React Podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I'm excited to get you back on the show. I think last time we talked, it was maybe Next 9 was kind of the release. I don't remember exactly how long ago, but it's been a minute, and you all have done some amazing stuff. Do you remember kind of like what it was that we covered last time?
So last time, I think we talked about automatic static optimization. So that was something we introduced in Next.js 9 and a bunch of other features. And I think that was like 1.5 years ago or so. So like a lot has happened since then. Yeah,
totally. A lot happens in 18 months for sure. And I think like AMP was a pretty big headline feature at the time because you had just started working with Google on, you know, with their teams to kind of like figure out what it was that they wanted to see in this, you know, static site generation and how you could better optimize for the things that, you know, a company like Google cares about.
Yeah, exactly. So like in Next.js 9.2, I believe we actually in Next.js 8 point something, we released AMP support, which was like our first collaboration with the Google AMP team to basically make it easier to author AMP pages, which is this format that uses web components. It's basically like a component framework where you can import certain components into AMP pages and then use those instead of like creating your own manually. And then like later on, we introduced a collaboration with the Google Chrome team, which is completely separate from the AMP team, where they basically are helping us improve performance for all Next.js applications, but also like just build on top of like existing web standards and like bring like optimizations that were previously not possible because like you didn't have the end-to-end solution for it, basically.
I love that. It's kind of funny that you mentioned that the Google
Chrome and the Google AMP team are like two totally different collaborations. I think, you know, oftentimes we have a mental model of, you know, like all, even though these companies are huge, that they kind of work together on everything. But no, it's like two different teams. And so like, as you've been doing this, it sounds like you've been working with two different sets of people, but like in the same organization.
Yeah, exactly. So like large companies like Google and Facebook, et cetera, they all have like so many teams in there that like they could be like not working together, or they could be under the same org and then like working together, but like side by side, right? So like there's a lot of intersection between like AMP and Chrome, for example, because like they try to optimize performance in certain ways, right? But then there's also like many teams inside of Chrome itself that are like completely focused on other things, right? Like people building Lighthouse and people building Chrome DevTools and all that. So
yeah,
and those are like different people from the people that we're working with, for example. But they're all in touch, of course, because like they're in the same org. Yeah.
Interesting. It must be fun to kind of like go through the kind of have reasons to kind of go through the different parts of the org chart as you're developing next. I wanted to ask, I mean, so you had just put on a huge conference, and so you have Next.js Conf, and there was a lot going on there, a lot of really cool releases. And so before we talk about the things that are specific to Next 10, I just wanted to get a sense of, you know, what putting on that conference was like. Were you surprised by anything? What's the Next community look like these days?
Yeah, definitely. So 2 weeks ago, 27th of October, 2020, we had a conference, Next.js Conf, and we had 70,000 signups with about 35,000 people attending, just like 50%. And yeah, we announced, we had a keynote, and in the keynote, we announced Next.js 10. But not just Next.js 10, we also announced Next.js Analytics, which is a new service that allows you to measure performance. And we introduced Next.js Commerce, which helps you get started building an e-commerce site really quickly. So it's like a starter for building out your own e-commerce store on top of Next.js. And that was created together with the BigCommerce team, which is a software-as-a-service e-commerce provider.
Nice, nice. And I think it's really interesting. This was a really fun event to watch, like from my perspective, because it seems like you are building, like, so you have the Next platform and it is like pretty stable. In, you know, spoiler alert, Next.js 10 doesn't have any breaking changes. It has a lot of new features, but not breaking changes. And so it's cool to see that you've kind of started doing more to augment Next. So whether that be Next Commerce, et cetera, et cetera. Tell me a little bit about how you see Next kind of in these coming years and what it will look like to develop on Next.
Yeah. So like, first of all, like you were saying, like there were no breaking changes in Next.js 10. Like the thing that we're basically trying to do is like make it as easy as possible for people to upgrade to the latest version, be that a like patch version, minor version, or a major version even. So even if like a major version like would deprecate something, like we would always like give you another way to like do the same thing, but probably like more efficiently or in a different way that is better for like bundle size or for other metrics. So really committed to making sure that like you're not getting like a really like awful upgrade path where like you spent months upgrading and then like figuring out like how all the new things work and all that. So it's pretty stable. Like since we released Next.js 9, we actually spent a lot of time, like in the first 2 years or so, Next is now 4 years old, like we released many major versions, mostly to upgrade like underlying dependencies that had major version upgrades like Babel and Webpack and all that. But we like the core API is still like very true to what the first version had. Like you still have the pages directory, you still have file system routing, you still have the link component, you still have Next head and all that. So like really like we're continuously like augmenting incrementally towards a better way of doing things, or like integrating a way that people are already doing things in their own application, but making it easier for them to like not focus on those specific bits when they start like either a new application, or like they can cut down some code in their current application, basically.
I love that. Now, you touched on something that I really like to talk about on this show and have very few opportunities to talk about, is versioning. And I think it's really interesting because you're on version 10 right now, but there's no breaking changes. And you mentioned a little bit about how you think about versioning, and how if you have an underlying dependency change, you'll make a breaking change for that. Are there other things that tie into kind of major versions for something, for an API that you own that doesn't have breaking changes?
Yeah, for sure. So it could be that like you... like an example of that is like Next allows you to configure your custom webpack config, right? So if you want to add in like custom loaders or custom plugins, like that all is possible.
Mm-hmm.
But if you do so, you lose out on us being able to know that your application is going to work if you upgrade, right? Because like you make some some edits, and like maybe we change something in our like the built-in config, and then like things could potentially break, right? Because you're making some edits in like an object that like we don't know about. And then like those could be like, okay, we know that like the majority of Next.js apps is fine to upgrade. But if you're like going to upgrade and you have custom plugins, like Webpack plugins, that could break, like we're still going to do a major, right? So like, for example, like Webpack 4, a Next.js app on Webpack 4 that doesn't have custom Webpack config is going to run fine on Webpack 5 as well. Because like we made sure that it's completely backwards compatible. Even with like breaking changes in Webpack itself, like we like covered those as well as like a backwards compatibility layer. But then like we don't know for sure if it's going to work for all Next.js apps. So like we don't release it as a minor or a like patch version, right? And then we also have many like integration tests. So like pretty much all our tests, like 99% or so, are integration tests that run against like Next.js apps being booted in continuous integration. And actually, like the tests are written against like a browser instance that is just like accessing pages in the same way that you would do it as a developer.
Interesting. Interesting. I like this because I think, you know, it stands in pretty interesting contrast to the way React versions. You know, it's like we've been on, you know, the version 16 of React for about 3 years. And I think that's one of the reasons I ask, is because it's really interesting to see. I think different people take different strategies for how they want those versions to communicate. And really, this is kind of like a social construct or contract of like, we want you to feel comfortable, and versioning allows us to communicate like these groupings of features, these groupings of capabilities and kind of mental models are all in this version, and they may or may not change in a way that impacts you in this next version.
Yeah, so I think the React team does a pretty good job at versioning. They also have like a lot less like scope in the, like, because it's only rendering UI and doing all that, like,
yeah,
all this stuff around it. Like, it makes sense that they're, like, on a major version for a long time. Like, I wouldn't expect, like, a React... Well, I'm actually, like, you would expect a React 18 that has, like, concurrent mode enabled by default or something like that, or, like, some compatibility layer. This is all, like, speculative, right? But...
Sure.
Like React 17, for example, it's like, okay, there's no breaking changes, but there are like some like nuances to it, right? Like the new JSX transform that works slightly differently from what people have been doing before.
right.
The like the compatibility of like running multiple React applications in the same page under different routes and all that. Like,
yeah,
that's really important. Like incremental migration stuff that they put out in React 17 that you don't immediately need per se, but it does allow like for new approaches to be taken, right?
Yeah, I love that. Now, one thing I wanted to touch on is that, go back to just a little bit, is, you know, you'd mentioned that earlier on that Next.js Conf had 70,000 people registered, and you were supporting, you know, peaks of like 35,000 attendance at a given time. And so I'm kind of curious, I mean, this streaming conferences is a fairly like new thing, given coronavirus and how we've like really been thrust into this. And it's interesting, like I know a lot of people who kind of expect audiences of, you know, sub 10,000. And I think that there's probably a lot of platforms that are designed for that. What was your experience putting on a conference that was going to need to support, you know, about like, you know, 40 to 50,000 people?
Yeah, so going in, we knew that there were going to be, like, there were 70,000 signups, like, at the day of the conference itself. So there could be a peak of 70,000 people watching at the same time, right? In reality, obviously, like, there's always, like, some dropout rate of people that just can't attend, or it's, like, too early or too late for them. In different countries, of course, because this is, like, all over the world, of course, because it's online.
Sure.
But like we started evaluating a lot of the like there's a bunch of SaaS providers that are now like going into the like virtual event space, right? Like building out virtual events and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But we weren't sure like if it could actually handle like that many people, because like in a general conference, it's not going to be like, okay, we have a peak of 70,000 people. It's like we have a few thousand people, right? Yeah. There's a huge difference between like a few thousand people and 70,000. So we basically set out, and we knew that we had to build something ourselves. So we went out and we started, like we basically dog fooded our own platform. So the Vercel platform, where you can host your Next.js applications, and Next.js itself. So the conference platform for Next.js Conf was completely built on Next.js. And one of the cool things about that was that we could basically dog food all the new features in Next.js 10, like the image component.
Nice.
And a lot of other new features. And by doing so, we could actually like verify, like, okay, like we know Next can scale to millions of people because we see it every day with like really large companies. But we also had this case to like verify, okay, like we can run this type of conference on the Vercel platform, like no sweat. Like we didn't have to do any like SRE type things. Like it all just like worked out on itself. So like that was a really nice thing to see. And then the other cool thing is that we're now like wrapping up the code that we built for the conference, so like the conference platform itself, and we're going to release that as a separate example or like a starter kit for building your own conference.
Nice.
So like if you want to like create the React podcast conference, you can actually do that.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't have to sustain nearly as many people as you did, but yeah, absolutely. I think that's really interesting, and I think it goes back to how you're starting to make more of these kind of predefined starter kits for Next. And it seems like Next itself is becoming a little bit of a platform where you start with Next and then you can build onto it like these tailor-made things, whether that be commerce, whether that be a, you know, a conferencing solution. It seems like more and more of the effort is going into these tailorings of Next towards a specific need.
Yeah, for sure. Like a lot of our roadmap is based on either like issues that we run into every day, like people having problems with a certain approach inside of Next.js. So like an example of that is in Next.js 10, we announced that you no longer have to use href and s on the Next link component. So you can just use href and we'll automatically resolve that to the correct dynamic route.
Oh, nice.
Reduces a lot of friction if you ever use Next before using dynamic routes, which is like the path segments, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Like you had to manually provide like, oh, this is the page and this is the like href that I want to go to. So those were two different things. And now it's just like, provide us the href and we'll figure it out for you automatically.
Nice. You know, this ties into a little bit of a, I don't know, like a a thesis, I guess, or kind of a design perspective that I've been fleshing out over the last year, which is in React, having a strong migration story as you go from like lowercase I components to uppercase I components, and how there's a natural tension. I think we've seen a lot of React libraries that go full in on React and do a wholesale replacement of some type of long-standing web, you know, something like links, right? And it seems like with the href, with what you're doing with images, which we'll talk about soon, it's really kind of like narrowing down on how to make that migration path from the like lowercase HTML element to the uppercase like component element a lot more, I guess, like virtuous, or like a lot easier to kind of like switch those things on and off as needed. We're kind of seeing this a little bit with href, making that a little bit more like a regular href, but then also with image. Could you talk a little bit about the design in making that migration and those mental models a little bit easier for people who are transitioning?
Yeah, for sure. So like when we released the next link component initially, like that was back in 2016, like end of 2016 when Next was released, the very first version had Next Link. And that was using the like sort of like the standards at the time, like React.CloneElement, like on the like nested child, like render props were not a thing, hooks were not a thing, like pretty much like all the things you know today were not a thing. And like out of that came like you have to write like link and then like nest an a tag inside of there, but the href has to go on the link, and then the a tag is just like an a tag without any attributes. And it was fairly normal at the time. So like over time, we added dynamic routes. So that basically allowed you to say like, okay, I want to have some like path segment going into, like say you have like slash blog slash slug or something like that, right? And then you want to replace the slug with hello world or like my own blog post, etc. So that is something that we introduced later, and then we had to add in this property called as, which is like the href is the page, and then as is actually like the route that you want to go to.
Sure.
So then you have to link to like the page name instead of the like actual URL that you had. Because then like the writer knows like, okay, this is the page I need to render this specific URL. And it also allows to map different things to a certain page. And then like over time, we actually realized like, okay, this is adding a lot of friction to like the end user, like the developer using Next. Because either they forget and they get a different behavior than they wanted to. So that's like full page transitions. Because like if we can't find the page, it would do a full page transition, would still work as a transition, but it's not the same thing exactly. So basically, like we wanted to reduce the friction that you have as a developer going from like, okay, I'm going to do a link component with a href to a dynamic URL. And that was something that came up quite often. So like we knew it was a pain point and we had to fix it. And it required some architectural changes as well, like inside of Next.js core. Like we spent a few like weeks preparing towards that point, as it unlocked other features as well. So really, like we're now actually like driving into the direction of like, okay, we're going to have that same like sort of experience as like your native like a tag, for example. And it will just work for you automatically. So we're like lifting a lot of the work out of your hands. Same with the Next.js image component, which we haven't talked about yet, which is the new component that was introduced in Next.js 10, where like you can just replace the IMG HTML tag inside of your JSX with image, and it will generally work if you have a width and height set. And I'm saying if you have a width and height set because it does a few optimizations for you. So it allows you to prevent layout shift. So layout shift is this new web vital. Now I'm basically like throwing around words that you might not know, but if you go to web.dev and you look up for web vitals, you'll see that it's a new like standard that Google is using to that's Google is going to use to index pages. So
interesting.
Say you like it basically checks for performance of a site, right? Like if your web vitals are good or core web vitals are good, it's generally an indicator of like your site has a good fast experience. So that includes largest contentful paint, first contentful paint, and cumulative layout shift. And cumulative layout shift is basically this jumping around of items on your page when it's being loaded.
Yeah.
So we've all seen this because like everyone that has used the web has seen this before on any site. Not any site, but like on many sites, basically, where you load the page, especially like on mobile, then you start scrolling and then it's like, I wasn't here when I stopped scrolling, but now it's like at the bottom of the page or like at some completely different section of the article. And that's because of layout shift. So like ads come in later, images come in later, and then like they take up the space that they wanted to, but the browser didn't know that it was going to take up that space when it was being requested. Because like the developer had it marked like, okay, this is the space I'm going to need to render this image in this specific page. So that is what Next Image helps you with. Like it forces you to set a width and height, but then it allows you to, basically that's like the width and height that you would want to expect, but it's not like width and height on the image element because it's not going to like wrap out of a div, for example, or something like that. Like we have different layout options that allow you to choose which layout you're actually like supporting. Like if you want to have responsive images, you say layout responsive and it's going to like stick with the aspect ratio of the image, but it's not going to like scale down or scale up in a way that you wouldn't expect to.
Interesting. I really like this, and the Web Vitals is a really important tip because as far as I know, Google indexes pretty heavily on the performance of a site, or at least that's taken into consideration quite a bit, maybe even more so than people would think. And so knowing what the standards are and what the things are that the Google crawler is looking for in terms of a fast site could really provide a lot of value to people who want to optimize but don't really know what the most important things are. I want to talk about a little bit more about the image optimization techniques specifically, because I know it can be a little bit of a weird mental shift to think like, oh, I'm putting, you know, these specific numbers in for width and height, but it's not actually going to necessarily be those, depending on my layout and whatnot. What are some of the things that you're doing for people to optimize images? And then also, like, what is WebP? I guess all of those kind of things that happen at the optimization phase of the image component.
Yeah, for sure. So like the Nexus image component is basically like a layer on top of the like normal HTML image element. But we try to like add in all the things that you would generally forget to add if you're building a site yourself. Like even if I would go and be like, okay, I'm going to build like the simple HTML page, like the defaults of the image element are like, okay, we're not going to lazy load. Everything is going to be requested immediately.
Gotcha.
And then like it's all sent to the browser and it's going to display them all, even if they're like way down in the page. And like it's like maybe your site is like a really long blog and then it has all the images loaded already. But that like has some downsides because it's going to like take up network when you don't want to. Like because other resources have to be loaded first. And it also like generally adds in layout shift because you don't have width and height set. And you're probably also not serving the images in modern formats like WebP or AVIF or something like that. So this is like basically what we aim to solve with the Next Image component, where the defaults are there to basically help you get better performance, better web vitals. And then specifically layout shift and largest contentful paint. Because going back to web vitals, just to give an example of that, largest contentful paint is generally measured as like the largest element in the viewport when a page loads. And the large element in general, like if you go to most websites, it's going to be like a really large image of something. Could be a person like waving or something like that. Or it could be like, I don't know, if you go to my website, there could be a picture of me and all that. So that image has a really big impact on that largest contentful paint metric. Because if that image loads in fast, the largest contentful paint is going to be fast. So the image component actually allows you to, like, if you start using it, it's lazy loaded by default. That means it's only loading images that you can see or that you're close to seeing. And then images that are in the initial viewport, you can say like, oh, this is a priority image. And when it's a priority image, you basically don't get the lazy loading behavior. You get the immediate loading. And we also inject a preload into the head of the page. And this allows it to be like basically loaded as fast as possible. And we've seen like really big improvements in large contentful paint, like up to 50% in some cases.
Wow.
Like in more cases than not, basically. So that's a really good outcome there. And then for all the other images on a page, like the images in the footer or like images in your blog post, but they're like further down in the blog post, like those are all lazy loaded. And then the width and height is needed to calculate the aspect ratio to make sure that the like space needed for the image is there when you're loading the page instead of when the page is like when the image is loaded, basically.
Interesting. Now this is fascinating because, you know, I've done a lot of, you know, design and front end development, and images really are one of those things that you kind of have the best intentions about, but, you know, when push comes to shove, you kind of just get it up there and you're like, yeah, I'll fix it later. So I really like this notion that you have like a really nice migration path, you know, just using this, you know, the small I component to get it up there, but then you can upgrade in it to the large I image component and then have all of this capability to like really control the size, quality, and speed of that image being loaded to users.
Yeah, exactly. So like so far we've only covered the like component itself, right? Like this is what the component does. Mm-hmm. Like throw in any image and it would do that for you. But there's another aspect to this whole image component, which is because Next.js allows you to handle the end-to-end, or that we handle the end-to-end basically for you. So that goes from like compiling your dev server, like your production server being started and all that. It allows us to add in extra functionality as well. So what we did was we implemented a image optimizer that works on demand, so it doesn't like increase build times, for example. And it runs in development, it runs in production, works anywhere basically. And that allows us to do more optimization. So you give us a URL, so like /profile.png, for example, and that's a PNG. But when your browser tells us, because then what we do is like we automatically prefix that URL with like our image optimization part. And then what we do inside of Next.js, the production server, is actually like take that URL, fetch the image, check what your browser supports. So if your browser, basically all browsers, they publish in their accept header, this is the format that I support for images. So that could be, I support WebP, and it could also be like WebP is not there, so WebP doesn't work. WebP is this format that Google created, which is a lot smaller than the like general like PNG or JPEG, but without quality loss. So if we like convert those images from the like original format into WebP and then serve that to browsers that support it, we actually reduce the amount of bytes that have to be sent. So you get smaller images, but without like any of the downsides, basically. So Next.js has that built in. So we detect like, okay, you support WebP. Here's the WebP image instead of the like original image. And then also we support resizing the image. So we have this default set using SRC set on the image element. So it's all like web standards, basically, that allows you to, like when you create this image and you just put in the same URL that you did with the normal image tag, it's going to create smaller versions of that image for like smaller browsers, right? So for your phone, for your tablet, for your laptop, and then also for desktop. And it does it automatically. So you don't have to configure anything. You don't have to like go in and know about all these different things like SRC sets and all that. But it will just work automatically. So basically, what this allows us to do is like serve smaller images across the board, because if you're on the phone, like the image being displayed is generally smaller than if you're on your laptop, right? But generally, like we forget to do all these optimizations because they're really hard to do, right? You have to set up these different build tools. You have to know about SRC set. You have to configure SRC set. That makes sure that it happens for all the images that you're using on a page.
Yep.
And these could be in like different components, different layouts, all that. So it becomes really hard. And then what Next allows you to do is just use Next Image. And then like a lot of that work is abstracted away from you, allowing you to focus on just like, okay, I need an image here, and that's it.
I do think that's super interesting, especially that it's integrated in kind of that full stack Next framework, because there are services that do this, but that the handoff is not always delightful, right? And it really is nice to just kind of have your images kind of where you expect them to be, and then have Next, the framework, really figure out all of the benefits. And I think specifically with WebP, I know a lot of people have wanted to try embracing that, but like actually doing that is so complicated. It's almost never really worth the time. So to get that for free is really interesting.
Yeah, exactly. So we did some research, and HTTP Archive has some data on images. And it's basically 0.3% of images is using WebP currently.
Wow.
So that's... It's still quite a few websites, but it's not enough, right? If you're wanting to optimize in that way. And then even like newer image formats like AVIF, which like Netflix is adopting, and like the Chrome team is also pushing for now, is even smaller than WebP, but with like even less quality loss. So like that's a format that we're going to support in the future. And all you have to do is upgrade Next to leverage those, right? So like you don't have to know about like what AVIF is, but we'll automatically like know if your browser supports it, and then we'll serve it to them where possible.
Awesome. Now, in terms of deployment targets, I know that obviously all this stuff is going to work with Vercel. Are there other deployment targets at this point where features like this are going to work like right out of the box?
Yeah, so Next can be deployed anywhere that supports Node.js hosting. So that means like if you're running Docker or like you're putting it on Heroku or like anywhere else, it's going to work because you're just using like the Next.js Node.js server, and then we set the correct cache control headers. We do everything the same way that you would do it on Vercel, for example. But on Vercel, you get a few benefits there, which is that you don't have to manage your own infrastructure. So you don't have to worry about like, okay, can I actually scale this? Like thousands of images that I have like on the disk that I put in into like my Docker container. And also you don't have to worry about like scaling up the application, because it all like all the Next.js pages become serverless functions. Which can scale infinitely. So like your like the bottleneck basically becomes your database, not so much the like platform you're hosting the code on. So like really like you can host Next.js anywhere you want. Many like companies host it on their own like private infrastructure or like some other cloud provider. But once you host on Vercel, you basically get a complete workflow from end to end, where like if you do a commit on your GitHub branch, you get a automatic preview deployment. You can review that and then put it into production, basically. So that is being done by some really large companies as well. I'm not sure if I can share which exactly, so I'll not say right now.
Sure.
But potentially I can put that into the show notes. And yeah, so the image optimization works like anywhere you want to host, as long as it's not using Next Export, so static exporting, because we don't do the image optimization at build time, like I explained. It runs on demand. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is that we didn't want to basically make your build slower, even for static generation of pages, because image optimization is quite resource intensive, especially if you want to optimize all images at the same time, like in a build pipeline, for example. So like we don't want to make your build times, like, I don't know, 15, 20, 30 minutes just because you have many images, right?
Right. Right.
And that's especially true when you have a CMS powering your website and like people are uploading images and all that. And it also doesn't keep you never reach the limit of the amount of images on your site if you have dynamic content, right? So you have a blog, like you keep adding blog posts. So like every blog post you would add in more build time. And we're trying to avoid that, basically, like by doing the image optimization on demand when a user requests it, and then like we cache it automatically.
Yeah, I think that's super important. I mean, because so much of this goes back to, you know, things that are difficult or painful, you know, you're not going to do. And I really like this as a design constraint of Next, is trying to find those places to like make it as easy as possible, do it in that way, and keep, you know, keep things fast and ensure that we will do them as a result. You mentioned something that I wanted to touch on, in that because of these full stack solutions, there's a differentiation between, you know, static content and dynamic content, and images kind of sit at the intersection of that. And I wanted to talk, I know we're kind of careening towards the end of our time today, but I wanted to talk a little bit about how Next is handling that, how you can kind of take just certain trees and treat them as like a very statically generated part, but then keep other parts like perfectly dynamic. Could you talk to those APIs for a little bit?
Yeah, sure. So in Next.js 9.3, we introduced get server-side props and get static props. And get server-side props allows you to do server-side rendering, which Next has always been able to do. So it pre-renders the content for every single request that comes in. And then the opposite of that is get static props, which allows you to pre-render content at build time and then serve the same generated content to end users. And then in Next.js 9.5, we actually introduced incremental static generation, which means like you deploy your Next.js app, you can generate some content at build time, but you can also generate static pages on demand. And that's only like a single property that you have to add, which is revalidate, that allows you to set a timeout for, okay, I want to regenerate these this content for this page every so many seconds, basically.
Nice. I love that. Cool. Well, you know, we're kind of getting to the point in the show where I said I'd let you go. But I want to ask you before we let you go, what are you most excited about in the next, you know, 2, 3, 4 years kind of timeline? Obviously, you've been really chugging along and doing some really good work and incrementally getting Next to a place that has great developer experience, but then also amazing ergonomics for customers and people experiencing the web. What are you excited about coming up on the horizon?
Yeah, so really, like, our focus has always been on like end user experience and developer experience. So we focused a lot of resources this year on improving end user experience by reducing the amount of JavaScript and also improving developer experience by giving you things like fast refresh, which was available inside of Facebook, was developed inside of Facebook, And you couldn't really use in the like open source React space. So basically, like we set out and we built the fast refresh support, that like all the bits needed for it to be to exist in open source, and then implemented it inside of Next.js and shipped that, which is showing great results in developer experience space, because it allows you to keep the state for like say you're making some edits inside of your code, it's going to keep the state and it's also going to be resilient to errors. Like maybe you make a typo, it's going to like preserve the state across typos as well. So like if you make a typo, it crashes your app, and then you fix the typo, it's going to be right back where you were. If you were like
Oh, nice.
typing something in a form, for example, you have that in state, the state will still be there. So it really makes you more productive in that way. It also is more reliable because it's hooked into React itself, which basically like makes React aware of like, okay, this is a hot update, so like you're going to refresh the code of this underlying component. So we work with the Facebook team, like the Facebook React team, on this specific bit, and that's showing some great results. So like looking to the future, like we're going to keep improving this. Like we introduced a new error overlay that has more accurate errors when something happens. Like say you make a typo in your CSS, that's now a very nice error. Like I don't know, like importing the wrong like module, like maybe you made a typo in the module name, like that's going to be shown in a better way now, and things like that. So we're going to keep improving those, and then we're also going to basically help you achieve the things that you wanted to do anyway, but in a faster way, right? Like an example of that is the image component. Like maybe you wanted to optimize images, but it was really hard to do that. And we introduced features for those specific cases. Another case of that is, for example, in Next.js 10, we introduced internationalized routing. And internationalized routing is not the full solution yet, but it just gives you the routing part of internationalization. So that means that you can use any React translation library, and then use internationalized routing to handle the routing bit of that in particular for your Next.js application. So we're planning out to provide more resources for that. So improve the developer experience of internationalizing your application even more by like providing the tools for like translation loading, for example, is a big issue. Like it requires a lot of custom code and like know-how of like, okay, this goes here and then like it has to go there because hydration and all that, right? So like we're going to provide more resources for that in examples and also building features. Like we're also always listening to the community. So like if there's many people saying like, okay, like I'm running into this like every single day when I'm working on the Next.js app, like we're likely to fix that. And besides that, like we introduced another like interesting project as well, which is Next.js Analytics, which is a service from Vercel that you can use for any Next.js application. So even if you're not hosting on Vercel, that allows you to track performance over time. So what I mean by that is, like Google is going to use Web Vitals to rank search, like rank inside of search, and what they basically do is like they basically refer to like real user experience, and real user experience is like calculated by CRUX, which is CRUX, which you might want to look up, and that basically holds the like Core Web Vitals for like general pages, like from general end users, right? So that is like something that you can't really access and measure yourself over time. So Next.js Analytics allows you to keep track of these performance metrics in a very easy way. Like all you have to do is enable it if you're using Vercel, or set up like a single key inside of your nextconfig. And then like it's going to keep track of your end user experience over time. And then we'll give you scores. We'll give you, so like the score is like the real user experience score. And it's basically something that you can improve over time. And then also stay fast over time. So like maybe you spend like a full week with your team on improving performance. And you want to know if your end users are actually benefiting from that, right? So Nextjs Analytics allows you to track those types of improvements. Another is like maybe like someone does a pull request that introduces a massive image on your homepage, and all your end users are suffering from this because like this 10 MB image takes a lot of time to load. So like the metrics of that specific page are going down, right? So Nextjs Analytics allows you to like see that score going down. And we're also going to introduce like alerting on that, basically. So it allows you to make sure that your site is going to be fast over time, which really fits into this like whole vision of like Next.js helping you to be more performant and allows you to focus on like keep improving your application over time as well.
Yeah. It's really wild to see how much y'all have been up to. And I think, you know, something that we barely even scratched the surface on is the value of Next being this project that sits in between, you know, Facebook and Google, which I think is, you know, a place where a lot of, web developers sit, right? They're sitting kind of like in between, you know, React as a build tool, but then, or a UI development tool, and then Google, who's actually, you know, ranking their pages, you know, directing people to them, making sure, kind of exposing some of the information that makes those pages fast and rank well. And, you know, Next is really sitting at the middle of that and kind of, you know, holding the hands of both parties and developing solutions in a way that makes that easy for people who really just want to make make a site, want to make a commerce platform, want to put on a conference, like whatever you want to do that you might need to make, might need to build a website for. Y'all are taking the things that you learn and the new tools from both parties and making and building those into Next. And I love seeing that.
Yeah, definitely. So, like we collaborate very closely with both of those teams, like the Google Chrome team. There's a team inside of the Chrome team that is working full time on Next. So they're basically helping like provide these like really large performance improvements, like the image component. And they're basically like the reason that they do that work is that. Like obviously, like you can introduce a lot of like new standards and like try to push people towards these new standards and all that. But people are still building like React applications or like applications in different frameworks. So basically, like inside of the Chrome team, they decided like okay, like maybe we need to like continue our like. Like the standardization process, right? Like that's working out great, but like that team is really big, the Chrome team. So they were basically like, okay, maybe we also need to spend some resources on like the framework ecosystem, where we can actually push like some of these really large sites that are, for example, built on top of Next.js, to implement all these like improvements that are like affecting the whole ecosystem. Like an example of that is, can you improve what Webpack gives you out of the box, right? So an example of that is in Next.js 9.2, we introduced better code splitting. So like we made the Webpack chunks algorithm smarter through many hours of testing and figuring out lab data and all that. Like someone on the Chrome team did that. And eventually they found, like, okay, if we change these settings inside of the webpack config, it's going to reduce the amount of JavaScript being loaded by like 30 to 70%, depending on your application, which is massive, right? Like on a large application with no code changes at all, it's a large improvement. So like all they had, like all the Next.js users had to do was like upgrade their application. And then they would get this like improvement in performance for their application without doing like any work. So then it's like, okay, that's a nice improvement on Next itself, right? But like, how does the rest of the ecosystem like improve based on this? So like, they also worked with other frameworks to introduce this improvement. So like Angular and others. They also like the new Webpack 5 chunks algorithm is actually like more so based on what was built into Next like 1.5 years ago or so. So
interesting.
Like there's a really like big like ecosystem factor into doing these types of improvements, like figuring out like what is a good improvement. Like the image component, we're seeing some like really big performance improvements for like either small apps, but also like really large apps that have a lot of images. Because they like, even if they had like many images, it could be that the like developers didn't think about it, like, okay, maybe we have to lazy load them all. Or like maybe we don't have to lazy sure. load the top row, right? Like maybe you want to display like all these images like really fast because they are critical for the experience. Like, I don't know, if I go to IKEA and I've been spending a lot of time on the IKEA website because I'm moving. you basically see like these really large images like in the initial viewport. And I'm generally waiting for those images to load because I want to see what's on them, right? And then I'm going to go into the website. So the faster those images load, the like faster I'm going to the website. And that's just one example, right? Like there's many different layouts and many different ways that images are being used. So yeah, that's basically like something that we're seeing that is just like, okay, we can actually make a really big impact. And then also because Next is being used in like such large applications, like the largest news website in China, many very large websites in the US, like all over Europe. We're even seeing like government corona dashboards. Like a fun one was the Dutch government. Like I live in the Netherlands, I'm Dutch. Like the Dutch government is using Next.js to show the like corona statistics.
Oh, nice.
And yeah, we're seeing just like everything. We're seeing everything from like small sites, like one pagers, like a corona dashboard, to like massive sites, billions of users every year. And yeah, so it's a really large surface of impact, basically, like these like smaller changes that are seemingly small can make.
Yeah, they have really big kind of like secondary effects and like a huge impact across our understanding as an industry about how to navigate these important things, but in with the tooling that we have, you know, Webpack, React, serverless, etc. So if people want to know more about Next 10 or Vercel or your work, where are some good places for people to learn more, get involved, etc.?
Yeah, so if you want to learn more about Next.js and you haven't used it before, I would recommend going to nextjs.org/learn, which is our interactive learn course where you actually like build out a Next.js application interactively so you can follow along and try it out. If you do have used Next.js before, you can go to nextjs.org/10, which will send you to the Next.js 10 blog post. And I would also like, if you're like more so a visual watcher, like you can also watch the Next.js Conf keynote, which we'll put in the show notes. And
Yep, we'll link that.
that is like a more like conference keynote type like overview of the Next.js 10 release.
Awesome. Now, where do people find you about the internet?
So just my full name on pretty much any platform you could think of. So that's on Twitter, on like GitHub, etc. And yeah, that's about it.
Perfect. We'll link that too. Awesome. Well, hey, Tim, thanks so much for your time today. I really appreciate it. And I know that a lot of people will be really excited to have a little bit more in-depth look at the things that you've been working on and all of the effort across organizations that it took to get us here. So thanks again.
Thanks for having me.
This has been episode 121 of React Podcast with Chantastic and guest Tim Nootkin. A transcript for this episode has been sponsored by Ben Myers. Thanks, Ben. It's been a tremendous honor getting to know Ben as we've worked together on the React Podcast community in Discord. He gave my absolute favorite talk of the year, Hijacking Screen Readers with CSS. I strongly recommend that you check out his writing at benmyers.dev. If you'd like to support the show by ordering a transcript, send me a DM at Chantastic or at React Podcast. You can find the transcript for this episode, links, and show notes at reactpodcast.com/121. Thanks to those who supported this episode, Honey Badger and Infinite Red. When your deployments go sideways, you want Honey Badger at your back. Honey Badger gives you DevOps superpowers by combining error monitoring, uptime monitoring, cron monitoring, external service, and job monitoring all into a single, easy-to-use platform. Give Honey Badger a try today. Visit honeybadger.io, mention React Podcast at signup, and get 30% off for 6 months. Again, that's honeybadger.io. Infinite Red is your friendly expert resource for React and React Native. They've worked with developers and entrepreneurs like you to design, build, and ship quality apps, and they've been doing it for over 10 years. Infinite Red will give you $750 when you start or refer a new project. Get expert React and React Native help at reactpodcast.infinite.red.
If you like this show, there's a fast, free way to demonstrate your support. Leave us a review on iTunes. It's the best way for you to let me know what you think we're doing right and what we can improve. 2 to 3 minutes of your time helps us make the best show we possibly can. As always, links and show notes for all episodes are available at reactpodcast.com. This episode was edited by Mikhail Delport. It was produced by Mikhail Delport and Sarah Jackson at Spec, a network to help you level up in design and development. Check out spec.fm for other shows that are sure to fast track your career. I'm your friend Chantastic. Thanks for listening. We'll be in your ears again next week.